Thank you for tuning into the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah, and I am so excited for today's episode because today I will be doing the first of a two-part interview with author Camille Griep. Today we will be discussing her first book, Letters to Zell, and then in the second part of this interview, we will be discussing her second novel called New Charity Blues. I'm excited because Camille is a wonderful author, and she's also a really good friend of mine. I've known her for, oh goodness, about 20 years, I guess, and we met when we were in college. We worked at a Lutheran Bible camp once, two summers together in Montana, and the second summer we were in the kitchen together. She was the head cook, and I was the assistant cook. So if you ever need anyone to whip up about six turkeys and 18 loaves of bread, we can totally help you out. But that's where we got to know each other, and she's been a good friend of mine ever since, and I'm so excited that she has now started writing books because she's a wonderful writer. And we're going to talk to her today about her writing processes and her first novel, Letters to Zell. We do have to take a quick break before we get started, so stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's gsmcpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. As I mentioned before the break, I am so excited to have my friend, author Camille Griep, here with us today. Cammie, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you, Sarah. I am so thrilled to talk about my books with a close friend. It's a real treat to be able to not only discuss the books, but to be able to really talk to somebody that you know can get into your head.
I don't know. Is that a good thing?
It might be a frightening thing.
I promise I'll be gentle. So we're going to talk about your first book, Letters to Zell. And would you just give us a general overview of the storyline and the plot?
Sure thing. Letters to Zell is the story of three of the Grimm fairy tale princesses. In our case, this is Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, and Snow White. And we join them in their happily ever afters. The question that I asked myself when I started writing this book was, what is happily ever after? And so I wanted to do some exploration of what that might look like in a setting that combined both the fairy tale and the modern world. The question being, what if a fairy tale said, I want the reality, instead of, as I so often hear, I want a fairy tale. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting concept for the first book, and it took several iterations to tell the story of these three very different women and their friendships. And we threw it out there in the world, and
it was good. I loved it, actually. I loved what you did with the characters. It's written in a series of letters to Zell, who is Rapunzel, correct?
That is correct.
Yes. And so how did you decide which fairy tale characters that you wanted to focus on?
Well, I started out thinking that I wanted to tell Cinderella's story. I had a whiteboard, and it was a giant whiteboard. And I decided that I wanted to go into aspects of each character's thoughts and desires. Did they really want to be a princess forever or a queen forever? Did they just want to sit on a throne and rule? That's something that the Disney stories kind of usually leave out. We end with the love affair and the wedding and the party, and then there's nothing else. And so I wanted to kind of explore that dark space. The way that I chose the princesses was quite random. I decided to try and stick to the Grimm canon for the central part of the story. So I chose princesses that everybody would know the basic stories for. Sleeping Beauty, everybody, you know, knows the basics of that. Although I did go into a lot of the Grimm fairy tale portions that get left out. For example, when Sleeping Beauty is rescued by the prince, the spell is already wearing off. So he doesn't actually, as in Disney, he doesn't fight his way up. He just sort of meanders as the spell is wearing off, and she's already awake when he gets there. So I wanted to sort of examine the dichotomy between what we know in popular culture and what the story is actually said. So the reason that I chose them was for, you know, popular accessibility. And Rapunzel ends up being the catalyst for the story, but she doesn't actually have much of a, she doesn't have a voice at all, and she doesn't have really much to do except to read the letters of her friends. So,
yeah, I found that interesting. I mean, we find out parts of Zell's story when they're referenced in the other three letters, but we don't ever actually hear from her. So what went into that decision to exclude Zell's voice?
So I did write the story both ways. And what I decided was that I wanted the reader to put themselves in Rapunzel's place. Looking back, I might have put some sort of instruction in place for the reader. But if you, say, wandered into Rapunzel's bedroom and picked up her pile of correspondence at her desk, what you'd find is this book, this story to sort of piece together from the letters and recounts of these other three women. Because the book isn't really Zell's story, it's theirs. She kicks everything off when she follows her heart. She decides to go start a unicorn preserve with her husband. And it's whimsical and wild and unexpected. And her friends are like, well, wait a minute. What are you doing? You can't just want something else. And this is autobiographical in some ways. When I quit my job to start writing, the reactions were really varied. My dentist sent me flowers, but some of my coworkers were really cruel. And, you know, they would say things like, well, if I had, you know, if I had time, or if I didn't have responsibility, or, you know, nobody really asked if I had been planning it, or if it was something I had been working for. I had reactions ranging from, oh, thank God, to what the hell. So it was interesting, and I wanted to sort of examine that as a catalyst for other people, in this case, the Grimm princesses, sitting down to really examine what they were doing with their lives.
Mm-hmm. And so did your decision to write it this way, to leave Zell's part of the correspondence out, how do people react to that? Are they favorable generally, or is it kind of polarizing?
It's very polarizing, and it was something that I knew would happen, and I made the decision anyways. Sometimes, I think as an author, you have to make a decision to either stay true to what you're trying to do, hoping that the reader will come with you, and knowing that some readers won't. Mm-hmm. Zell's POV being point of view being left out is a fairly common complaint. Some readers do seem to understand why I did it. One reviewer on Amazon wrote that she wanted a disclaimer that it was only letters and that there weren't any letters from Zell. And she must have been harassed enough to take it down, because the title really couldn't be clearer.
I was just going to say the title is Letters to Zell.
In fact, that's how the title came to be. When I was workshopping the book, I kept getting questions such as, is this just letters? You can't write a book in all letters. And why isn't Zell answering them? So I changed the title as sort of a tongue-in-cheek move, but the publishers loved it and it stuck. I will also say that people tend to bring a lot of their own baggage to a book. Mm-hmm. I certainly do.
Me too.
I had one comment that I was way harder on the adulteress in the book than I was with the adulterer. that I was too hard on parents, that I didn't advertise the fact that Bianca is attracted to women, that it is not realistic enough, that it was too realistic, that letters weren't written like real letters, which, as an aside, would have been hellaciously boring to read.
Yeah.
Most of all, with female friendships, this sort of habit of comparing our own lives to what happens in books really is a ultra common occurrence. I had to be at a certain point in life to write the book, mm-hmm. and there have been times in my life where I wouldn't have been able to write the book, and I probably wouldn't have enjoyed reading it either. So not all books are for every person, and not all books are for every person at every time in their life. Mm-hmm. So I get it, and I'm hoping... I really take joy in the fact that some women will write me and tell me the book is exactly what they needed at that time in their life. And I'm hoping the book will catch some women at that point and continue to do so kind of as a long tail. And that some women will pick it back up maybe in a few years and say, oh, I get it now.
Mm-hmm. And when you are writing, because, you know, it is written from the perspective of three different characters, and so it's, you know, it's usually Dirzel or and you do start out with kind of their stationery, so we do know who the letters are coming from. But yes. Did you find it challenging to try to write in those three distinct voices and make sure that it was easier for the reader to figure out who was writing?
It was an interesting project. One of my, pardon me, pet mm-hmm. peeves as a reader is books from multiple points of view that don't sound as if the characters are different. Mm-hmm. Not to throw any books under the bus. I enjoyed the Divergent series, but I felt as if the chapters between Triss and Four, for example, the male and female character, they sounded almost identical. And I felt as if these women really, really deserved their own individual voices. I used things like tense and passive voice to try and separate them, and that was a big, big project. At one point, I reordered the book so that I could read all three stories as three separate pieces, mm-hmm. just to make sure that the voice continuity was the same. Bianca, of course, was very easy to write. Bianca is also... Snow White.
I was going to say Bianca is always easy to tell when she's writing because she's very opinionated she has a bit of a potty mouth.
She is a huge potty mouth and she's very direct. She's always speaking in present tense, really in your face. And it was really fun to write, but I knew that I had to use that sparingly because too much of that would probably turn a lot of readers off in a book. She's somewhat of a comic relief instrument, mm-hmm. Although she does have her own story and her own sort of push and pull that, you know, in the trio, she has a huge role in being sort of the ringleader, the troublemaker. And she was, of course, the easiest to write. I wrote it chronologically, though, and so reordering it was... absolutely necessary because I would slip back and forth into other voices.
Mm-hmm.
It was most difficult to make Cece or Cinderella and Rory / Sleeping Beauty different. Rory is very quiet, passive voice, sleepy, mm-hmm. sort of somnolent woman, and although she changes in the book to become more like her friends. And so at the end of the book, I think you will see those voices sort of merging more, and that was intentional mm-hmm. because I feel as if in real life, we often take on, you know, the pieces of the people that are closest to us. We not only take on, their sayings. Adam, my partner, does this a lot, where if he hangs out with a certain group of people, he will start using their slang mm-hmm. or their hand signals or their gestures. When he's with his dad, he sits just like his dad. Things like that.
Yes.
So I think that we tend to take on Rory starts cursing at the end.
Yes.
So, you know, we sort of see this sort of melding of all these friendships and how everybody changes each other. And I think that that is a part of real life.
I agree. And we do actually have to take a quick break right now, but when we come back, we're going to be talking more about Letters to Zell. We're going to talk more about how it gets classified and some of the relationships that it explores. So stay tuned, and we will be right back.
Are you looking for the very best NFL and college football podcast? Then check out the GSMC Football Podcast. Get the latest football news, both on and off the field. From the NFL draft to trades to the rumor mill to the NFL combines, they got you covered. That's gsmcpodcast.com/football-podcast. Get updates on college rivalries, game day insights, and much, much more. It's football talk the way you want it. This show eats, sleeps, and breathes football. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. Before the break, we were speaking with Camille Griep, author of Letters to Zell. We were talking about the perspectives of the three characters who are based on the princesses Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, and Snow White. And Cammie was telling us about the different perspectives of writing each character. And Cammie, before when we were talking about the book, before we were doing the interview, you mentioned that you mentioned the word fluff. Can you expand a bit more on that and what people mean by it?
Sure. I was mentioning to you that one of the criticisms, or not even a criticism, but one of the interesting pieces that keeps coming up in reviews is that people will say, this book was a quick read, it's fluff, but it's enjoyable.
Oh.
I'm always baffled by Letters to Zell being classified as fluff, because I don't really consider women's friendships and lives and dreams as fluff.
No.
However, there is a lot of satire in the book, and I think depending on one's mood, a person could read the book on several levels. But things get pretty dark at the end, not to spoil anything, but I really think some of the conversations that are occurring at the end of the book nullify the fluff categorization. It's interesting how women in particular talk about books about women. I think we tend to be very critical of books that aren't dealing with things like death or such as, say, Gone Girl, which is a book that was super popular about a couple who is extraordinarily dysfunctional, and the woman is assumed dead or hurt at the beginning of the book. And you have very dark subject matter throughout. And I wrote Letters to Zell as a book with layers. It is a funny book. It is a light story in some portions. And again, it is very dark in others. We deal with, you know, all kinds of things that are, I think, more of the day-to-day struggles of a person. There's nobody going around whacking anybody. But I think there's still serious conversations that are occurring. So, you know, it is interesting that some people really get into the end of the book. I have gotten emails that are very angry with me about the ending of the book.
Oh, really?
That it surprised them so much. So I think, you know, there's a corner that gets turned where perhaps it's fluff in the beginning, but not at the end. So
I find that interesting, because the word fluff never entered my mind. I mean, I see it classified sometimes as chick lit, which has its own issues, you know, as a genre. But when you first started describing this to me, because we had dinner a couple of years ago and you were telling me about writing this book and I was interested, but you know, I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. I really look forward to reading it, but not sure exactly how you were going to lay it out or make it work, et cetera. And, you know, when you have a friend writing a book and you think, oh, what if I hate it? You know, yes. What do you say to your very dear friend? You know, oh, I liked the way you used your commas. That was great. I knew it would be well written because you're very, you know, you're a very talented writer, but I wasn't quite sure what to expect from the book. And I loved it. I mean, I thought there was really good character development. I thought the relationships developed. I thought the way you explored, because you explore relationships between the women, but also between men and women. You explore relationships that are platonic, romantic. And so just for me personally, I thought you did a really good job of developing the characters, developing the storylines, and not going, you know, it wasn't predictable. It didn't end where a lot of people might have thought it would end.
Right. So I really wanted to explore adulthood. Mm-hmm. I wanted to write a fairy tale for adults. And part of that impetus was wanting to explore male and female relationships in a way that I don't typically see in fairy tales. In this case, it would have been very simple to make all the men idiots and just move along. But I wanted to talk about and I'm not criticizing Disney, but a lot of times we see couples who want the same thing. There's an obstacle put in front of them. They overcome the obstacle and then everything is fine, which is quite wonderful. But when I grew up, I didn't really understand what a healthy love or relationship was. And I really enjoyed being able to share with other women, young women, old women, what a relationship looked like when the romance is taken out of it. For Cece and Edward, their relationship is tested because Cece wants very much, this is Cinderella again, sorry. Mm-hmm. Cece wants very much to go to cooking school, but there's a miscommunication and he wants the best for her and she's not explaining herself very well. This is something that happens in relationships all the time.
Yes.
But we rarely are allowed to have the discussion about how two people are often involved in a communication problem. In this case, it's both of their faults. Nobody, you know, there's no one evil, bad person, and the complications just keep mounting and mounting and mounting. And it's not for their relationship, it's a relatively small conflict, and yet it's huge because it involves her self-worth. So in Bianca or Snow White and her partner William, they are platonic friends, and mm-hmm. they are supposed to get married because that is what the fairy tale tells them. And they are doing the best they can at being friends until something challenges that. For Sleeping Beauty, she and her prince, they have nothing in common. And so trying that particular storyline examines trying to change yourself for another person, which is, you know, very often doesn't work. So in some ways, this does fit the chick lit categorization, but I hate that as a classification. I hate it, period. If we, as a publishing industry, stopped marketing things this way, we'd stop inviting some of the conversations and arguments about what men and women read, because we'd stop telling people what they're allowed to have.
Mm-hmm.
Women need books about women, but they also need other books. And men need books about men, but they also need other books. stop telling people what's for them and just offer them books.
Right.
The most surprising lesson that I learned with Zell happened when we were shopping the book to publishers. And as with readers, women publishers either loved or hated the book. They related to it or they abhorred it. It was bought by a male editor who read it and felt that it was really special, and it really meant a lot to him. I'm not sure if it's the fact that men's friendships work somewhat differently, or if they're just absorbing the humor and emotion instead of applying their own standards to the book, relationship-wise, but almost overwhelmingly, the male reactions by those willing to read a fairy tale about three women have been really positive, which was a lesson to me about self-categorization and marketing myself in too small of a space. The book changed my mind about who books are for. One of my most glowing reviews came from a gentleman who writes a blog about religion and books and geekdom, and he did this wonderful multi-part series about the book and what he thought of it as a man and about the relationships explored, and I was just floored by it because that it meant so much to him. It really changed my whole perspective on how books can touch people, and that I shouldn't be, telling all my friends it's chick lit either.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not. It's just a book.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I think just the genres that we try. I mean, working at an advertising agency, I do understand how things have to be categorized so you can figure out your demographic, but at the same time, it does limit you.
It was a hard book to sell because of that. Where do you put it on a shelf? Is it fantasy? Not really. Is it contemporary? Not really. Is it a fairy tale? Kind of.
Kind of.
It's so one of the big obstacles we ran into over and over again was, what shelf do I put this on?
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that going in, that writing hybrid books such as I write is always going to be a little harder to classify. But I think we need books in the in-between spaces of the library. So
maybe there should
keep writing them.
Maybe there should be a section called the in-between space of the library.
I love it.
And it'll just be your books. I'm sure there's lots of others that could go in there. But we do have to take another quick break. So when we come back, we're going to be speaking more with Cami about her writing, some of the other things she does as a writer. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. We are speaking today with author Camille Griep about her book, Letters to Zell. And we've been talking about that book, but I also wanted to ask Cami some of the other things that you do in your writing life. I know that you do some editing. We were just speaking during the break that you are the senior editor at, let me see if I get this right, Lasco?
Correct.
Okay. And the editor of Easy Street. So do you want to talk a little bit about those projects?
Sure. I joined the Lasco Review back in 2013. I joined their staff shortly after winning their flash fiction contest. For those who don't know what flash fiction is, it's fiction that is broadly categorized as stories under 1,000 words, although this particular concept was a story in 250 words. It was the first contest that I'd won, and I loved working with the editors there so much that I asked if they had a job for me. And so a few months later, I began working as a reader, which meant that the editor, if he needed to make a decision on a story that he wasn't sure about or wanted some extra opinions on, I would weigh in, sort of give my thoughts. And then I finally advanced to senior editor a year or two ago, and now I am a contest judge, so we have lots of literary contests, from poetry to flash fiction to books to long fiction, things like that. And so I'm almost constantly reading for contests these days. And it's a wonderful, wonderful experience 99% of the time. Sometimes you read stories that you kind of wish you hadn't read.
Because they're bad or because they won't leave your brain, or why?
Yes, because they won't leave your brain.
Okay.
They're, 99% of the people that enter, as an editor, you're always rooting for people to succeed, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that there's this concept that editors sit behind a computer just waiting to throw things away. And in fact, it's quite the opposite. I want to open something and be mesmerized and surprised. And sometimes you're mesmerized and surprised because there's folks that write really horrifying things.
Right.
You know, when there's a piece of like horror in your inbox and you're just not expecting it, it becomes it can really change your day.
I would imagine.
But it's a great experience, and it's taught me a lot about my own writing. When we do a lot of interviewing and reviewing at Easy Street, which is the magazine that I started running back, we are a year and a half old now. And Easy Street was it is a sister project to the Last Go Review. And we started it as sort of a repository for everything that the Last Go Review wasn't. The Last Go Review has been around for about 4 years now, and it's a beautiful magazine that has very much its own aesthetic now. You know, when you take things that an editor loves, they curate it with their own personality. But it doesn't mean that they don't love other things that are coming into the queue. It just means that once you have a certain aesthetic, you need to take other things that meet that aesthetic. Mm-hmm. You're a marketer, you know.
Yes.
How this works. So Easy Street was originally designed to be sort of a grab bag. As a generalist in life, I was sort of the natural choice for heading that up. I love to have my fingers in everything. So we take everything from fiction to poetry to interviews to reviews to opinion pieces. And all we're looking for is writing that we think is interesting. We don't care about bios or MFAs or how many times somebody has been published. We don't care about credentials or anything else. All we want is really good writing. So that's been a wonderful project. I really love my staff. I have a bunch of really great people working for me. And as with most literary magazines, all of this is volunteer, so I feel really fortunate to have such a wonderful crew doing this work out of the, as we call it in the industry, for the love. Until they're better paid. The Last Go Review is finally starting to pay writers. They've been doing that for a few months now, and Easy Street hopes to get there soon also. So. Mm-hmm. It's a long journey for a lit mag to be profitable, but we are all in it for the writing, for the writers. So mm-hmm. it's been a lot of fun. And again, it slows down the novel writing process a great deal, but I've learned so much and made so many great connections. I feel like karmically, if you're supporting other writers, that support will be there for you when you need it. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm doing it to get something out of it.
Right.
What I mean, but I've never regretted supporting another author's work or exposing their wonderful writing or sharing their work with the world.
So how do you balance the two then? Because I would imagine that editing takes up, can take up a lot of time, and you know, you need time for a book as well. So
yes, for me, it's been an interesting project, and I will say that the balancing is always in progress. Editing can and will eat up all of my time if I allow it to. There's always something in the submissions queue. There's always something to do. There's always something to work on. So I really have to block out the times in my day when I'm best at writing, and then the other times can be devoted to editing. So I'm not one of these people that writes every day. If I'm having a day where I wake up and my mind's just afire with ideas, then I will spend that entire day writing.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I will try to write when my mind is sort of best. So for me, from 10 to 1, and then again from probably 3 to 7, is when I really am best. That mid-afternoon chunk between 1 and 3, I'm pretty useless. So it's not like I'm one of those people that like goes and naps under the desk, but my attention span is just kind of short. And I think it takes a while to learn that about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also not one of you'll find a lot of writing practitioners that say, "Oh, as long as you write 2,000 words a day, you're fine."
Right.
When I first started writing full time, I really tried to do that, and I ended up with so much crap that I hated. And then I started the cycle of, why are you doing this? You're not very talented. You can't, you can't even write 2,000 good words. And then I sort of backed off and thought, you need to do this in a way that works for you. And maybe this, strict sort of scheduling isn't going to be your bag. And so if I can't write in a day, I will do something writing related. So editing is writing related.
Mm-hmm.
I will read. I will, look at art or watch a movie or, do anything related to storytelling. Or I will sketch something. It's not like I'm an artist or anything, but I'll sketch out a scene from the book that I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
Or something that engages my brain in the larger project.
Mm-hmm. So would that be, if you could give advice to people who want to write, who are looking to someone who does this for a living, would that be your advice to just find what works for you?
Yes. You, as a new writer, will run into people who want to tell you the one true way,
mm-hmm.
and there's no one true way. And you have to allow yourself the flexibility to find the way that's best for you. Because people have lives. All of us have lives. I don't have children, but I have two dogs and a house to run and a family back in Montana, and things that are constantly pulling your attention away from your artwork.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, that's jobs, that's children, I like to say that life expands to fill the time allotted. And, there are days that I have to just, usually on a Monday, I do the grocery shopping, I do the laundry, I pay the bills. And I let that be a day where I address the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise the rest of the world is always ready and waiting for you. And I think it's really easy to look around, particularly in the art world, and see people who seem to have it all figured out when that's a big lie. Nobody has it all figured out. Everybody's always rebalancing and struggling. Finding what works for you, whether it's 500 words after you put the kids to bed or you wake up early and just write 100, it's making sure that you get the routine that fills you up and doesn't dry you out. You always need to be filling yourself up with art. And I think we worry too much about the output and not enough about the input.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably good advice for life in general. And it's actually a really good place to stop, because that is all the time that we have for today. I want to thank you so much for joining me in this discussion. I really appreciate you taking the time. And you're going to come back for another episode, so I'm excited about that. And thank you all for joining, for listening. Don't forget that you can learn more about the GSMC Podcast Network at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast and all of our podcasts on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, pretty much any app that does podcasts. You can follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr. Twitter, we are at @GSMC_bookreview. We'd love to hear from you. And I hope you will join me again next time as I speak with author Camille Griep about her second novel, New Charity Blues. In the meantime, go get lost in a good book.